Now here's the voice of North Florida lacrosse, Ray Carnicelli.
Welcome to another fun-filled edition of the award-winning Cradle to the Grave with Kerwick and Carnicelli. I am Ray Carnicelli, joined by my co-host, Matt Kerwick. Coach, how's it going?
It's going great, Ray. I'm sorry we haven't been together in a few weeks. We've got to get this thing rolling here, and I'm glad to be back on the air with you, my man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We've got an exciting show for you today. How about this for a lineup of guests? Obviously, you, Coach Matt Kerwick. I don't know, do I call you Coach anymore or just Matt? I guess it's just Matt. But our guests today...
Just don't call me late for dinner, my man.
There you
That's
go.
That's all I care about.
You can call me Ray or you can call me Jay. How about Mark Dixon of the Big Ten Network and ESPN? Love talking to Mark. We saw him a couple weeks ago at Jacksonville's scrimmage game against UNC.
So, yeah, it was nice running into him. You know, I don't know him as well as you, but he's obviously done a lot for the game, and he's... Very impactful behind the mic and a lot of the weekend games. And then he's been a great ref for a long time, and I know he's a heck of a player back in the day as well.
When you think about it, he's obviously a Division I player at Johns Hopkins, big time broadcaster with my idol Joe Beninati on the Big Ten Network. They're a great duo. He's a referee, and he is a father of two Division I players now, with one at Loyola and one at UNC. So it's always good to catch up with Mark Dixon. I want to ask him about replay in the spring. So if I forget to ask him about that, you make sure to bring it up. And then our next guest.
Very good.
The next guest, Brody Merrill, Big Bad Brody, number 45 of the Hill Academy. Somebody you know pretty well.
Yeah, Brody's one of the greatest of all time. You know, I mean, I think if people talk about the Mount Rushmore and all that stuff, I mean, he's obviously been, you know, in the game forever. It seems like I got to know him very young, you know, when he was very young as a high school player, and recruiting him to Georgetown and the impact that he had there. Unfortunately, I helped Coach Eric recruit Brody to Georgetown. And then I was lucky enough to get the head job at Hobart as Brody was arriving on campus. So I had to coach against him for four straight years, and that was not very fun, right? He's an unbelievable player and just tough and salt of the earth and one of the most humble guys you'll ever meet. And what he's done up in Canada with the Hill Schools is pretty incredible.
So an amazing playing career, coaching and administrating, and just, as you mentioned, a legend. And the Canadian games transform so much, and you know, you see these field guys in the PLL championship game, both goalies were Canadians. Down here in Jacksonville, I'm looking at their roster, and they've got two impactful young LSMs, D guys that are from Canada, and that's just not something you saw at all before Brody Merrill, and maybe not. You didn't see it very often, but just in the last couple of years, you see these Canadians in playing, carrying the big stick or playing goalie. And I think Brody and his program and the transformation of Canadian field lacrosse is something I'd like to hear about.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Ray. At that time, recruiting a Canadian defenseman was kind of unheard of, right? And he changed all of that, right? And now up at the Hill, he's just producing so many Division I players every year that have come up and kind of built that program, and it's really the impact he's had on the game is really evident every time you go watch a Division I game right now.
And I know the guys here at Jacksonville, that 45 number's a big deal. You know, Zach Deacon, Canadian NLL player now, wore that, and now another young Canadian defender wearing that number 45. So I like that tradition as well. Matt, since the last time you and I...
Yeah, you know what, Ray? You need to ask him when he comes on about, you know, where did that stem from? What does the 45 mean? Because it's a pretty amazing story. I don't want to ruin it. You know, let him tell the story. It's
good
really
deal.
Important.
So our listeners will be smarter after the show, is, you know, a lot of them, including
always.
Myself. Always.
Always.
And if we will have the album of the week coming up at the end of the show as well. But I did want to ask you, there is no more Chrome. Is it because there is no Chrome without Matt Kerwick? Or talk to me about your impression of the cities of the PLL.
Yeah, it's a neat concept. I think it was necessary. You know, that was kind of the next step in the progression. They've done an amazing job with the league. I mean, the level of play is the highest you'll ever see. The you know, the way they do it, the professionalism of it, the way the players are bought in, the way they've done really all the aspects of it in terms of the way you travel and the games and the way they're set up and how the teams are treated when they travel and the way they treat the fans. They've done it all the right way, but now it's kind of to grow. It was always a question: who do you root for, right? And hey, I know a couple of guys on that team. I'm going to root for that team, right? But I think when you have a city or a region attached to it, it's going to create a little more growth, and that's really the next step in the maturation of the league. So it's a smart play. I don't know why they're not. The Chrome is gone. Is it because we came in last year? I hope not.
Oh, but, relegated.
I think we got relegated. I think what it is, you know, there's just such a tie to Denver with that outlaw name.
Oh,
right?
the Outlaws and the Cannons. I love seeing those names back. I'm still, the jury's still out for me on the cities. And I think this younger generation, Matt, I know my boys range from 22 to 30, my three sons, Chip and Ernie and the other one. Their generation, they're more into the fantasy games. So they, you know, they root for the Jaguars and so forth, but their buddies are so into fantasy. And I think that's where the real opportunity is with the PLL. And I'm not sure the cities play into that. Whereas the players, you know, rooting for the players and your guys or rooting against guys, that's where I think the future is, but we'll see, you know, those guys are pretty smart. That Rabel crew is pretty smart. So we'll see how that all shakes out, but, you ready to jump right into it?
I am looking forward to it.
So let's bring on Brody Merrill. We'd like to welcome on our next guest on Cradle to the Grave, Brody Merrill. Brody, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Obviously, with the retirement and the playing days, how's the golf game? How are you spending all your time? Is it focused on the hill, or are you having some fun?
Yeah, I definitely gave up my playing career just because I couldn't really justify it. Being away, as you know, like playing the game and being away on weekends was kind of my pastime. So yeah, I got into golf a little bit more, but I've been, not a lot changes in professional lacrosse. Like, it's pretty, you're almost living double lives, right? Like, you're, you know, you can kind of compartmentalize a lot. You're gone from Friday to Sunday, and then, you know, most of us are back at our day jobs throughout the week. So, not a lot has changed other than having more open weekends, which has been really nice. And then immersing myself within the hill and my coaching responsibilities there. So, it's maybe a little bit more balance, healthier balance than maybe what I'm used to.
So how old are you now?
Just turned 42.
Okay, so you're still a baby compared to the two guys you're talking to. You know, Matt likes to say that he found you on the cornfields of Homer, New York. Matt, talk about the first time you heard who Brody Merrill was.
No, I'm not going to say I found him. My man Brian Rogers, who was a fellow assistant coach at Georgetown, and he came back. He had attended the Salisbury school, or he'd worked there and been a part of Salisbury when they're kind of building the lacrosse program there. And so Brian knew Brody was at, he might even helped you get there, right, Brody? I can't remember how that worked, but
he did. It's kind of a funny story. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us that story, how Brian got you to Salisbury.
So he was friends with Chris Anderson, who is from Orangeville, and Orangeville is a small town, but it's a big lacrosse town. but more, mainly box lacrosse. And so Chris was the first guy from our town to play high-level NCAA lacrosse, played at Virginia. And he met Brian, I think, just through lacrosse circles. And he connected myself and my best friend, Kyle Miller. And Brian was kind of our point of contact. He kind of recruited us to go to Salisbury and, you know, came up to Orangeville, watched me play a game of hockey. And we kind of had a real connection. And then literally the day before I left to go to Salisbury, and I saw Chris, and it's vividly in the Orangeville Arena. He's like, "Did you hear about Brian? Like, he left Salisbury. He's gone to Georgetown." And I was a little bit heartbroken at the time because he was a big reason why we were going. But it ended up working out, and it's some great people and coaches at Salisbury. And then, but then, you know, he recruited me to go to Georgetown. And literally the day before I left to go to Georgetown, it was almost the same time of the year, like same room in the arena. Chris was like, "Hey, did you hear about Brian? He left to go up to Hobart." And so he was just like, opened up these two massive doors for me. I never actually got to play with him, but yeah. So that was kind of my recruiting story.
Yeah, it was awesome. I remember when we brought Brian on at Georgetown, you know, at that time, second assistant coaches were kind of part-time, and it was just getting kind of elevated at that point in Division I lacrosse. So we brought Brian in, you know, the position elevated a bit, and that was really the first time I got to know Brian really well, and we became really close, and he kept talking about Brody. And we're like, "What are you talking about? You know, defenseman from Canada? You know, we're really going to recruit a big D guy from Canada, you know, to high level." We had just gone to the Final Four at Georgetown, and then we Brian's like, "Got to go watch this guy," you know. And so Coach and I went up to, I don't know where it was, probably the Tully Cornfield Classic or wherever it was.
Maybe I think it was the turkey shoot in Ithaca, right?
Yeah. It was in Ithaca, yeah. And we go up there and watch, and it took us about a minute to say, "Yeah, we got to get this guy." Coach Urich absolutely loved him, and you know, Coach was the D guy, right? So Coach was like, "We got to back up the Brinks truck for this kid," right? It was awesome, and then unfortunately, or fortunately, I was given the opportunity to go back to Hobart, my alma mater, and be the head coach, and I'm like, "Brian, you're coming with me." You know, Brian and I became very close, and so we had to coach against Brody for four straight years, which was not an enjoyable time. But yeah, that was cool how you got there, Brody. And I wanted to ask you, Ray was talking about the number 45. Can you tell us the significance of that up at the Hill?
Well, let me just jump in for a second because there's a little fight going on down here in Jacksonville and across the country. All these Canadian guys, you know, want to wear that number 45. You know, we had Zach Deacon down here at Jacksonville University, and now the new young Canadians are fighting over that number as well. So go ahead and tell us that story.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's a little bittersweet to tell. It was in my second year at the Hill, our second year of existence. So we're a really small school. And we had a pretty high-level group, you know, Coach Kirk would definitely remember these guys, you know, Jason Noble, Jeremy Noble, you know, kind of household names now, Randy Stass and Dylan Ward and Zach Palmer, you know, little Travis Como, which I think you might have recruited at Georgetown. But and then we had this young guy, he was only a sophomore, his name was Jameson Coleman. And really quiet, was really introverted kid, and you know, a little bit on, you know, much less experience than the other guys around him, but he just was a really, you know, great teammate and just a quiet worker. And just over the course of the year, really started to make some big improvements. And Randy Stats gave him the nickname Jammer after Cody Jameson. And he just, it was very family-like, you know, environment at the Hill because we're so small. And going into the summer of that year, after that school year, he was playing with his community team and got hit with a blindside hit, and never recovered. And so Yeah, so that they made a pact at that time. All the graduating players from the Hill made a pact to wear number 45, you know, in on future teams and in college lacrosse. And so, yeah, that's why when you see Dylan Ward play for the Colorado Mammoth, you see him wearing number 45. It kind of goes back to that, or Randy playing at Syracuse, number 45. And yeah. So we have a little tradition at the Hill where at the end of the practice every day, we have a 45 penny, and it kind of goes from teammate to teammate. So, you know, his legacy lives on, and a lot of, you know, Hill students and alumni have continued to kind of keep that alive, which is really, really neat to see.
That's thanks for sharing that, Brody. That is, it reminds me of 21 up at Cornell, right, with George Boyardi, and you know, you carry on that tradition. And I think for people listening to this, I hope, you know, however many people do listen to this, but, you know, when you're watching Division I games this spring and you see a 45 on the field, maybe glance at the roster, and I highly bet that it's going to be a Canadian guy that is wearing it with great pride. So appreciate you sharing that.
Thanks,
that's
bro.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Brody, I did want to ask you about your
your
time at Georgetown. I know Coach Urich is Matt's mentor and very important to him. What was your was there any culture shock just going to that type of university and into that environment?
A little bit. I mean, I'm being from a small town, you know, but Coach U. And also Brian and Matt were great. Like I still remember that day, and you know, at the turkey shoot, and just like kind of that upstate, you know, with Coach U, he's such a humble guy. And I remember saying this too, like, and you can remember that, Matt, like he wasn't really that aggressive when it came to recruiting, right? You're kind of wondering, does this guy, you know, does he like me at all? Like, is he, you know, I remember that the line is the only thing I can promise you is a seat on the bus, right? And that was his line I remember from the recruitment process. But yeah. So it was kind of this kind of like balance. And, you know, I'm sure, Matt, you felt this too, is like you're in a big city, and it's a unique environment that way. And actually my first freshman year was 9/11. So that added a whole nother layer to things. But it was kind of balanced with this like really grounding presence of Coach U, right? That was just kind of a father figure, and you know, and again, kind of brought that kind of upstate, you know, feel and mindset to practice every day, and I kind of, you know, connected with that, and so yes, it was a big kind of culture shock overall being at Georgetown, much different place than I was used to, but. I would say, and then my teammates, and so, you know, I formed like really close lifelong relationships with, you know, some of my best friends to this day. So I was lucky in that way. So it was a big change, but it was really good for me, and an experience that I'll, you know, we'll always be very thankful for.
How would you describe the mission of the Hill? And has that evolved at all in your time?
Yeah, it's evolved, I'd say, much more in the last several years. We just transitioned to a new campus, but it started. So my parents are both longtime phys ed teachers, and you know, my dad actually had transitioned and opened up a small business through his professional career, you know, selling equipment to people who had low vision, blind people, you know, visually impaired. And so he had a business background, but he also had that education background as well. And my mom was the best athlete of the family, and, you know, and playing various sports and through university. My dad was a football quarterback, and my mom played various sports. And so we, like, education and sports were always a big part of our lives. And then, you know, my brother and I had played NCAA lacrosse, and I had went to Salisbury, and really that was a kind of an inspiration for it. Just providing something here locally. So, you know, it was, you know, the experience at Salisbury was amazing, but it was also 8 or 9 hours from home, right? So there was something to that, right, where we just had been lacking in this area, maybe a little bit more of that relationship between school and sport. And that was really the philosophy that you know, the principles that we founded the school on. And it's kind of evolved. I mean, a lot's changed, but a lot's remained the same, I'd say. And now just in recent years, we've added an elementary program, and we're actually transitioning to K through 12 plus a PG next year. And oh, wow. So, yeah, it's been pretty neat to have. And now we actually have our first ever kindergarten class. So that, it's pretty neat to see some kindergartners running around the school. And so it's a much different feel from the early years. It kind of feels a little, which is surreal. It's kind of like a mini Salisbury in some ways, and just how it looks. And now we have, you know, dorm facilities and our own field, and we're on 130 acres up here in just outside of Orangeville. So, yeah, it's been pretty neat. Now my parents have since retired, and so kind of, you know, it's my brother, my sister, and I, you know, overseeing the school and the operation. So
that's fantastic.
I'd like to say that we had big plans for it, but it's happened really organically and kind of incrementally
since 2006. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Hey, Brody, I really appreciate your time. The other question I wanted to ask you is the field game in Canada. I grew up in upstate New York, and I remember we used to go up and had these like mini Olympics. Every other year, we would go to the city of Orillia, Ontario, and then the opposite year, they would come down, and every sport was played. I played soccer at the time. My sisters played softball, but they didn't have lacrosse at the time because we only played field, and they only played box, and obviously, you went through that transformation, and now we look, and the two goalies in the PLL championship game are Canadians. You know, down here, as I mentioned, in Jacksonville, we've got these stud LSMs and D-men carrying the long pole from Canada. Just talk to me about the evolution of the field game and how gratifying that is for you.
Well, it was pretty surreal having, you know, with both Dylan and Brad Dobson, we're still alums and kind of watch them grow up. And Dobson was I call him in an endearing way, a lax rat. But yeah, I think that's been the biggest change is that and I was lucky because there was the Gates and John Grant and, you know, a lot of these Canadians were going down and making their mark. And so coaches started to look more, and Chris was probably a big catalyst because he was a goalie, right? And so you kind of think of Canadians as lefty attackmen, scoring, you know, attackmen. But I think he was the first that kind of, you know, might have been the first Canadian goalie, I think he was, to play Division I lacrosse. So I think that really changed things. And so once young Canadians take note of that and say, oh, like you can – you know, further your education through the game, have these opportunities. I think it has kind of snowballed. And if you could have seen the field lacrosse that I played growing up here, it was more box lacrosse on the field, right? And it wasn't. And now you just see it now. More people are playing at a high level and then coming back and coaching, right? I was away this past weekend at a recruiting tournament in Baltimore and saw there was a bunch of Canadian programs there, right? All coached by guys that had played at a high level or NCAA lacrosse. And so now we have that box foundation. It's kind of part of our DNA and what makes us different, but now learning some of the nuance of the field game. And I think I look at Tom Schreiber as an example, coming back and playing in NLL. And I think that really helped his game. Mm-hmm. Reach another level. And so I think taking both of that's what we tried to do with the Hill, is kind of take both of those some of both and help make players a little bit more well-rounded.
Well, Brody, we appreciate your time today and really
thankful.
I
wanted to ask one question, Ray. One question to Brody, the most important question of the day.
What position and what age groups are your kids playing hockey up there right now? Tell me about your kid. Just a quick review of what your kids are doing.
We'll take this offline, I'm sure, at some point. But I know you're a hockey guy too. But yeah, my daughter is 11 right now. I think from a young age, she just like didn't like being in an arena, and so she just kind of plays recreationally. But yeah, and then I have twin boys that are 8 years old, and they're just starting to play hockey and box across up here. So yeah, they're having fun with it. Yeah,
awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate your time today. You've done amazing things for the game. Congratulations on your career and what you're doing for, you know, helping all these young people at the Hill. You're leaving a lasting legacy, my man. So thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. Nice catching up.
Have a great day. We'd like to welcome on our next guest on Cradle to the Grave with Kerwick and Carnicelli, Mark Dixon of the Big Ten Network and many other formats. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Ray. Thanks for having me, and happy Thanksgiving early.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you. It was nice catching up briefly person to person down here in Jacksonville when you came down for the UNC Jacksonville scrimmage. What did you think about the facilities over there?
It was really nice. I thought it was terrific. With the setup that you have there, the Adirondack chairs on the sideline and the fans right on top of the action. I watched from the bleachers, and really there wasn't a bad seat in the house. The kids had mentioned, because the coaches had mentioned, it was going to be a pretty hostile environment there in Jacksonville. But I think Carolina jumped on the Dolphins a little early and kind of took the crowd out of it. But they were back in the second half. But it was a beautiful night. Great weather, terrific venue, and that was a fun night.
Yeah, you think about this upcoming season in Division One, and you know there's the PLL and the NLL and the World Games. I love college lacrosse. I'm addicted. You know, I want to be Joe Beninati when I grow up because I love what you two do on the Big Ten Network. But this coming season, I'm really excited for. I'm excited for Jacksonville. I'm interested to get your thoughts on replay and how that's going to be executed.
Yeah, so I think it's way overdue. And then Ray, you know, thank you. You've been a long time listener of my podcast and broadcast and that kind of thing. And likewise on this end, you know, people would come up to me and say, we developed a drinking game when you're on television. Every time you say instant replay, we drink. And more times than not, we end up with a decent buzz at the end of a game. I've been a huge proponent for replay for years, particularly when the games are at the highest stakes. And finally, we saw it really bite a team last spring with Penn State, a goal that should not have been allowed in overtime. And we don't know if Penn State would have won that game or not, but the fact that the replay, there was no capability to replay that, it was bad. So it's on the table now. As an official, I will learn how it's going to be executed, how it will be implemented, the parameters at the beginning of December when we have our national meeting in the Baltimore area. And once that's rolled out, I'll have a better handle on how the officials are going to implement that. But I think it's a long time coming, and I welcome instant replay in the sport of college lacrosse.
Yeah, I think I'm excited. Down here in Jacksonville, we got burned in the SoCon championship game a couple years ago with a shot that was well after the shot clock expired. So we're a little bitter and eager. I'm all for it. I think there's going to be a lot of challenges at the lower divisions, Division II, Division III, even some of the lower level Division I games. But that's okay. It won't be worse. So that's the way I look at it. And if we can get the correct call in a few of the bigger games, especially the playoff games, it's going to be a win, but there'll be some bumps along the way.
Without question. There's always growing pains. We saw growing pains a couple of years ago with the shot clock. But you have to ease into it. You have to allow for, technological failures or, you know, shortcomings and human error and that kind of thing. But just to have the technology and to have the resource, I think, is a real positive for the sport.
And I'm sure there were lessons learned from the PLL, you know, watching Matt Pelham hurdle a table to go grab the tablet to take a look at it was always fun to watch. So I think the execution of it will, you know, there were obviously some learning opportunities, and I think it'll be great for the game. Hey, Kerwick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Mark, I want to kind of pick your brain on this. I mean, to be a ref at that high level now, the game is just, it's incredible, right? I mean, you see it every weekend. Your son's playing at the highest level now at Carolina and Loyola, and it's just different, right? I mean, to keep up with the pace that these guys are playing, with the speed and the strength and the way everybody's slinging the ball around, you've got to use that tool, right? I mean, like you said, and Matty Palin came on this show a couple months ago, and that was devastating to him. You know, he knew that he missed the call after watching it on the replay, but in the heat of the moment and the pace of the game, you guys got to have these tools at your handle, right? So I'm glad to hear. I think most refs are in the same boat. But I was wondering what your thoughts are on the Division I level of play. Kind of, you know, our day, Mark. It was, we wouldn't be playing these days, right? The level of play.
Don't speak for Mark.
I'll speak for you, Ray. You could probably still play. You're in great shape.
Yeah,
but you know, Mark and I, no chance. But yeah, Mark, I just the experience that your sons are going through and what you've seen and being around the game as much as you do. What do you think of the game right now?
It really has evolved, and I'll take it. You know, aside from my kids and their friends and teammates playing, and kids that I coached at the club level and the recreation level, now playing the sport. I just officiated a middle school division of an inside lacrosse tournament last weekend, and that's the first time I've done the middle school age in a while, and I was blown away at the skill of these kids. The ball doesn't hit the ground, you know, from defense to offense, and you can see them still growing into their bodies, and you still saw, you know, some kids have hit their growth spurt, and they're much bigger than the smaller boys. But, you know, to answer your question specifically, Matt, I reffed a preseason February game a few years ago with two of the best officials in the game. And it was like trying to cross a busy highway, you know, at rush hour. The game is so fast. The rules are as such that you don't get a break. And the kids are so big these days. So when you have a crease play, you know, is it a push? Is it a dive? Was he in the crease? Was he not in the crease? What path did he take? It is so hard to get that right, not only with the speed of the game, but also just with the collection of bodies that are in front of that and combine in that play. Right. So to have that replay opportunity. Now, look, I'm not a big fan of, you know, I'll pick on basketball for a minute. You know, last 2 minutes of a game, did it go out of bounds or not? Or this or that. It's like, come on, guys. Like, really? You got to, at some point, you have to trust yourself. But, hey, let's go to the monitor. And, you know, we don't want games in the last 2 minutes to take 15 minutes. But to what Ray said earlier, you want to get it right. And with the pace of the game, with the speed of the game, with the athleticism now that's featured, and let's face it, the stakes are much higher than they've ever been for coaches in terms of wins and losses and what, you know, and I know firsthand what these young men and women put into the game to be there. And you've heard John Donowski say it repeatedly, you know, the difference is one goal a lot of times between advancing and being called a genius and going home and being called a dummy. So to have these resources, I think, is gigantic.
Hey, Mark, just to switch subjects a little bit, the transferring and the NILs certainly changed the landscape. Once you get past the fact that it's not going back to the, you know, the days of, you know, our days back in the olden days, I've come around a little bit. Even in college football, where you see these quarterbacks getting second opportunities at different schools, and you see the kid who may be the third goalie at one of the top 10 programs get a chance to go somewhere else and start. I think it levels the playing field a little bit. What are your thoughts? Maybe not the NIL, but the transferring thing does.
So it'll be interesting to see how transfers progress after this year, because these are the fifth years, the final batch of fifth years, if you will, the high school graduation class of 2019, because the 2020s, they didn't get that extra year, that blanket year from the NCAA. So we'll see how things progress from here on out. To my understanding, it'll be the 2020s at the Division III level will have an opportunity for a fifth year, but not at the Division I level. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, it's been kind of neat to see some of the Division III athletes and, you know, what you would consider to be mid-tier Division I athletes get, you know, a second chance. Like you think about McConvey at the University of Virginia, and this year it's Jack Boynton, who's at Virginia and probably is going to be the new Andrew Dixon, according to all reports. And then you have a guy like Logan McGovern going from Bryant to the University of North Carolina. And that's just a, you know, a smattering.
And we had Max Waldbaum guys down here from Tufts for 2 years. And so these D3 guys, we've got one of the top D2 guys down here this year, a kid from Limestone and, you know, another kid from Pace who lit it up at the lower divisions. And now they get their chance to be center stage at D1. So I'm excited about that, and having been a former Division III player, knowing that I had guys on my team that could have played Division I level, nowadays they probably would have got that chance in year three or four. Guys like Jeff Clodsden and Dave Walters and, you know, Rich Barnes, you know, those guys were Division I players at a D3 school. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, no question.
Mark, you know, Matt and I, we got the big call up in the assignment. We're calling the UMass versus Army game on February 10th in Atlanta. So I told him, I said, he's got an assignment. He needs to go look at some of that film. He's going to be the Mark Dixon, and I'm going to play the part of Joe Beninati on February 2nd. I do want to hear a little bit about your preparation. It has to be helpful to be in the Big Ten for most of the games that you do on the Big Ten Network and not having to restudy teams you're not familiar with.
Yeah, so that's a big game. That is a game that has gone a long way, and traditionally that's a one-goal game.
It's always one of the best games to kick off kind of early in the season, right, Mark? That game is always one that was like, those two teams are going to get after each other, you know, and it's the season is here, you know?
Yeah,
I'm excited to do it with Ray. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, tone setter. And, you know, hopefully you get some knock on West Point or Amherst, but hopefully you get a little bit better weather down south than what they traditionally play in. But, you know, look, the preparation is, you know, I'm a big believer in you call what's on the field and you go into a game with a certain mindset. This might happen. This will probably happen. And you just have to let the kids tell the story. That's the great thing about sports is you know who the players are and you know who can do what, but who on that day is going to scheme better, is going to play better, who's going to get an advantage. So I think you have to go in as an analyst with that, you know, broad mindset. For a guy like Joe, Ray, I think we've talked about it. I mean, Joe's a perfectionist. So, I mean, his boards almost look like the Rosetta Stone, you know, with respect to the detail and the preparation. So he's all about player identification. And if he misses a player or misidentifies a player, he's beating himself up for like a quarter.
I love that. So. I think it's kind of the hockey style from his background. You know, when you're watching a game in the fast pace today, especially if it's a team you're not that familiar with, it's nice to know who it is on the passes like Joe provides rather than small talk about who had what for dinner the night before. And that's the one thing I really appreciate about your crew and what you and Joe do. And so Matt and I have been preparing and he's been coaching me up a little bit. So, we're excited for that big opportunity. It's Shootout for the Soldiers is the event. So excited about that on February 10th.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And Mark, I got to tell you, Mark, if the Sabres aren't on and the Lightning aren't on, I live down in Tampa, and there's a Caps game on, I put it on just to listen to him. He's great. He's great doing the Caps games. I really enjoy listening to him. So
him, and he's been with Craig Lachlan for a long time. I think Craig is very underrated as an analyst. But yeah, the Caps, they're putting it together, man. Watch out. They had a rough start to the year, but they've I think they've won like 6 out of the last 7 or something like that.
Yeah,
they're starting to come alive.
You talk about tough to win. The NHL right now, who the heck knows, right? Those guys beat the heck out of each other.
No doubt.
Every night, you don't know who's going to be good right now. So it's going to be a fun season.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap it up because we could probably go all day and have one of these Joe Rogan-length podcasts, but we'd probably lose some of our guests. But I want to ask you guys both a question. Mark, last concert you went to?
Last concert I went to? Oh, my God. Let me put my thinking cap on. We just bought tickets for Journey and Toto
are
coming to Baltimore in February.
He's talking my language.
So we're going to that show. you just put me on the spot.
Well, we'll give you time to think about it. Matt, do you know yours while Mark's thinking?
I'm trying to think. You know, I went to The Who and I went to The Stones with you, but that was a while ago now.
Oh, okay. I saw Peter Frampton not that long ago down here in St. Augustine, and I just found out Bryan Adams is coming to town, so that tells you where my loyalties are. So, Mark, well, I guess we'll have to get back to us. You have to ask your bride.
I just remembered it was Hall & Oates.
Oh, yeah.
It was a reschedule from during the pandemic. So I think it might have been either late 21 or early 20. Yeah, it was the summer of 22, I want to say. And that was with D-Fly, my co-host on the D-Fly Dixie podcast, and another buddy of mine. Yeah, so that I think it was Hall & Oates at Merriweather.
Yeah, so we've got The Who, The Stones, Hall & Oates, and Peter Frampton. Our younger guests are like, oh, my, and I'm getting excited. You're going to see Journey. I want to go see Bryan Adams. And so that's kind of where we are right now. But, Mark,
let me ask you one question, Mark. Do you like Pearl Jam, Mark?
Oh.
Love Pearl Jam. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Good. Because Ray was like, I've never even listened to him. Like,
I don't know who they are. No.
How's that even possible?
Yeah. That's just where I am.
Yeah. That's a good band.
My kids are older than your boys, and my oldest is 30. So during that era, I was playing dad and probably listening to Garth Brooks. But
gotcha.
Mark, we usually end this show with Matt Kerwick giving the album of the week. So we're going to do that with you on the air here. But I do appreciate your time as always. Looking forward to catching up with you in the spring. It'll be here before you know it.
Right. Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. And good luck with the podcast.
All right, Matt, let's hear it.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on, Mark. I got to get the list. It's a stellar list from front to where we are now. So I'll get that, Mark. But today we're going to go one. I used to listen to this, Ray, on my Walkman before hockey games, before I was playing hockey, and all my buddies were listening to Judas Priest and AC/DC and what you probably should listen to in the locker room. But I'd listen to this album, you know, Get My Mind Right. And you might think that's a little weird to get pumped up to play hockey, but it is an all-time great band, obviously. Legendary band, Pink Floyd. Wish You Were Here is the album. Listen to it start to finish. Enjoy it. Mark, thanks for coming on. Ray, you're the man.
All right.
I'll see you soon.
We had Mark Dixon and Brody Merrill joined us today, along with Matt Kerwick. I am Ray Carnicelli. You've been listening to Cradle to the Grave with Kerwick and Carnicelli. Have a great day. Come on here.